This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Time for another edition of your favorite segment and mine, Thursday Coast, with the founder of the largest online progressive community ever, Daily Coast, still thriving, still going strong. Marcos joins us. And Marcos, let me tell you, I was sharing with you all, probably heard Marcos a few weeks ago. I was telling him one of the classes I'm taking, the psychology of white Christian nationalism. Yeah. Marcos wanted, it sounded like he wanted to audit the class. And
I totally would audit that class.
I was meeting with my professor yesterday and I said that. I said, you know, there's somebody pretty prominent who liked to be in this class. She said, who? And she knew who she's heard of Daily Coast. She's like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, she was very impressed by that. And we are learning a lot. And yeah, there's a lot to unpack and a lot more. We just, in fact, I had to exegete a book just yesterday in class by an author by the name of Denker. And her book is Disciples of White Jesus, The Radicalization of American Boyhood by Angela Denker. And really, y'all, parents, educators, coaches really need to be getting up on this stuff, because this is a whole new genre of learning and understanding and psychology. And maybe we're going to need a Netflix series like the one they did on incels that won all the Emmy Awards to really point out what's happening. And one thing I learned from this, in having this conversation just even on yesterday, is that some of these young men are not only the problem, but they are victims at the same time. Mm. That's what's really, the book says men and boys are the problem and men and boys are also in trouble. So there is, you know, we all have strains of toxic masculinity.
There's a reason they're susceptible to this messaging. It's because they are actually hurting.
Yeah.
And this is where we, I think, as liberals, because we're like, the patriarchy, F them all. Right. You know, what do you have to complain about? They have all the advantages. They, as individuals, don't feel those advantages because a lot of them don't have that upward social mobility, right? It's you know, people always want to go back to class, right? Like, if you're a wealthy white dude, yeah, you got it made. But the problem, the incels aren't the wealthy white dudes. They're not the incels that we need to be worried about, right? It's people who are in the lower ends of the socioeconomic ladder who are struggling to make ends meet, that struggle to be able to date, like they desperately want to get married and have a family, and those opportunities have closed off for a variety of reasons. And women get to be more picky. They get to make their own lives, and they don't need a man like in the old days. And there's been a lot of polling, and it's fascinating, where women don't want to get married, right? They don't want to get stuck with some loser man.
Right.
And want nothing more than to get married, right? The disconnect between the sexes. And this doesn't mean, oh, we got to cater to men by having women be chattel for men and settle for unhappy partnership. Like, nobody's saying that. But there is a real pain among some of these young men that society and history and tradition had a guidebook on what life was like. You worked, you got married, you had kids. And that has in large part, has disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we haven't, as a society, the way to replace that, to give these men a new purpose, a new story for what they need to do to achieve and succeed.
Well, two things. You're right. One, it's not just that I'm saying not just that women don't want to be with loser men. Women don't necessarily need non-loser men either.
Right.
I mean, women are doing good, right?
Right.
They're doing things for them. So it ain't just we were rejected because some of us are, you know, okay, but you know, they're good. They're in control. They're more and more becoming even the major breadwinners and heads of household. That doesn't negate that, you know, there's still some sexism and there's still no equal pay. Yeah. But women, so there's that. But some of these young men are propagandized to continue to live out that Leave It to Beaver fantasy, which is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that's unfair. And the other thing too is, it's not just about women. In this white Christian nationalism movement, men are still encouraged to be so macho, so Valhalla.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's not women, there is no structure really anywhere for young men especially to talk about their problems, their anxieties, their insecurities, because if you do that, you're weak.
Yep.
You know, there's something wrong with. So people, you know, it's not just all about women. It's not just all about it. Some people have some serious problems to work through. And God forbid you acknowledge your upbringing or your childhood trauma.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is suppressed.
Yeah.
And it may manifest as I'm an incel and women don't want me, but some things have happened in some of these people's lives that is far worse than that, right? And there's no way to address it, no therapy for it, because you can't show that. How many of these young men themselves have been victims of abuse or even sexual assault? But you can't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to jump in with the white Christian nationalist group and do, you know, macho Jesus, and I'm going to conquer women. But then there's something else that has happened to you. And I think I told you, Marcos, you know, when SiriusXM used to send me to go to some of these CPAC things and conservative whatnot. One year I just stopped and just looked at people. And I saw a lot of people moving around who, for lack of a better characterization, seem to be in recovery. You know, some people become zealous religiously, especially if they're recovering from some trauma or even some addiction. Because
mm-hmm.
that's a disciplined space to be in. So I got to do that because that helps keep me out of trouble. I'm going to go back to the bottle, or I'm going to go back to the drug or the medicines I was addicted to. So even with what the movement is doing is exploiting that. It's making it worse, and it's creating a distraction from the real treatment that is needed. Maybe some women, let me tell y'all something, Marcos and I are good guys. You know, some women, don't need us anymore. I mean, we're just not, I mean, nobody's checking. You know, and women are no longer defined by being connected to a man.
Yeah.
So we're an evolving society. So what men have to do is figure out, well, what does that mean for me? And how does that define me, or how does it not define me? And how am I being treated and heard in such a way to make me worthy of companionship and or worthy of empathy? So the macho Jesus, the white supremacist Jesus, God is, man is the head of the family. Yep. God is a man. And that's to, in the moment, it makes you feel better. I'm a broken man, but Jesus, I'm Jesus, because I'm the head of the, and I'm God. But in the long term, in those quiet moments at home.
But it also tells you you're not the problem. The problem is society. The problem is those feminist women that are upending the natural order of things. And the natural order of things are the man is the head of the household. The men are the stronger sex. Women are designed biologically to pump out babies and to take care of those babies. And who are these feminists to totally rewrite these rules that are against nature or against God? It's not your fault. It's those feminists. There's this freaking fantastic article in I believe it's The Economist. Mark, I may have sent it to you before, and if I haven't, I'll send it to you again, or I'll send it to you, which is basically what's wrong with young men today. And it looks at sort of globally, this problem globally. And it opens up with a Polish farmer. And this Polish farmer, in the old days, you're a farmer, you're out in the fields, you marry the village girl, you work hard in the fields, but you go home, she's got food for you, she's pumping out babies for you, and that's just what tradition says, right? Now, all the young women in that village, they're heading off to Warsaw, and they're going to law school, and they're becoming fancy as lawyers or corporate executives, and he's coming home from a hard day of working in the fields, and there's nobody there for him, and there are no women left in this village because they've all left. And then you got somebody like Vladimir Putin, who's saying it is the decadent West and feminism and the gays that are completely destroying your way of life. And wrapping some of that up in that white nationalist Christianity, which Putin absolutely has, the Russian version, but it's there's a reason they are so complementary to each other. And people like Tucker Carlson are so enamored with Vladimir Putin in Russia. And you sort of create this radicalized, nationalistic right wing, which is ascendant in many parts of Europe. It's incredibly terrifying. You're seeing it in East Germany. You're seeing it in places like Poland, France. I mean, nobody is immune. We talk about our own incels here. This is a global phenomenon where men, because women finally have rights, and they're asserting those rights to make their own lives. And men who can't adapt to that. Mark, I have a partner I've been with 8 years. She lives on the other side of the country. I'm in California. She's in New Jersey. She would never get married. And I, not only do I accept that, I encourage that. Like, that is her true expression of who she is and what gives her value in life. And I place myself in a way that's complementary to her, as opposed to trying to like mold it into something that would make both of us resentful, because it wouldn't make either of us happy. Right. And so women want those relationships, but men that are stuck in that old sort of paradigm of what tradition tells you that the nuclear family looks like can't meet that. And so everybody's unhappy. I mean, the men are unhappy, which is why the right wing gets to prey on them. But women are also unhappy that they can't find good, solid men that will support them and will be their cheerleaders and will be true partners, as opposed to this man as the head of the household BS. And that's sort of the challenge that we face on the left globally, is how do we give purpose to young men, and how do we rewrite the narrative of what a partnership and a relationship looks like? And quite frankly, I don't see any work on that front.
Yeah. Well, and here's the irony, though. You know, part of being macho one time was, I don't need no woman. Women, you know, you know, I'm a man. Woman does doesn't matter to me. Now, oh my God, I need a woman. I don't have a woman. So that's part of the irony that people don't even realize. But I agree with all that you said, and women want to be achievers and go to school and have ambition. And so that's an evolved position for you to have in support of your partner. But then the advantage people our age have is that, I mean, we've had our children.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like you necessarily looking to settle down and start a whole new family with anybody.
Great point. And my partner would never have children.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, that you all are equally yoked in that regard.
We know how many
people do that and then end up with a second and third family.
Yeah.
Lord have mercy. But
what is it? I love my kids. I'm done.
You got one set of kids 30 years apart. But listen, I didn't really mean to get too much into this, but I'm going to do this, folks. And I've asked Dr. Cooper White, who's my professor, to join us one of these days. I'm going to put her book on the screen, and I'm going to say it for those listening. The Psychology of White Christian Nationalism by Pamela Cooper White. She's a clinician. She's actually my professor this semester at United Lutheran Seminary. And I encourage you all to read her book. She says after we get through this semester, maybe she'll come on the air with us sometimes, Marcos, and talk more about this. If nothing else, y'all, we got to just get back to reading and informing ourselves. I mean, I know we go in and out of news, but sometimes it's good to read a book and just understand why people do some of the things they do. And I've learned a lot. So for your library, The Psychology of White Christian Nationalism, and none of what we're doing is beating people up or being cruel. It's really showing some of the clinical issues. And being in a seminary, you can't help but have a level of empathy and compassion, because ultimately what you want to do, you want to solve it. You want to help. You want to get people to see that there's help for them and there's love for them and there's a way to survive. And it doesn't have to be, manifest itself in violence. So that's one book for your library, The Psychology of White Christian Nationalism by Pamela Cooper White. There are plenty of others. I'm going to share one more with you. The one I talked about last night, Disciples of White Jesus, The Radicalization of American Boyhood, and Angela Dinker.
That is a fantastic headline.
Yeah, Angela Dinker, she and all these books have case studies. She, as a Lutheran minister, Reverend Angela Dinker, was able to get access to Dylann Roof's pastor, because Dylann Roof was raised in a Lutheran church, and talked to him. And what is the thing that we always hear in these stories when it comes to the mass shooters and whatnot? Oh, I never would have expected this. He seemed like such a nice young man. So something is missing. Somebody is missing something. And we all have to decide that we're going to be involved in doing something about this. So those two books, Psychology of White Christian Nationalism by Pamela Cooper White and Disciples of White Jesus, The Radicalization of American Boyhood. Some of us, can be angry and defensive and upset, but others of us have got to decide, what are the mechanisms to stop this? And I pray that as people are going through therapy, as people are going through things, even in schools, she talks about the schools, and it's one thing to erase history, but what's happening in schools with social workers and whatnot to help identify these issues and treat them, so that these young men stop being a danger to themselves and dangers to those around them.
Mark, so, I just had them downloaded to my Kindle.
Okay, good. Those are two good. And there's some others. I'll be sharing those with you. And these are important conversations. Now that I think about it, this might be at some point a good Netroots panel or something. Because if we're not reading this stuff and understanding it, We're just on hamster wheel, just mad about it. Oh, they're doing this. Why are they doing it? What is that all about? And you'd be surprised, some folks, you might find some things in your own circle, in your own family, that you didn't realize are festering and are taking place that you weren't prepared for. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. And Mark, I know this is not the most, it is political. Everything's political. But I think this is an important conversation to have, actually. And I think not enough people are having that conversation. And because, again, there's this sort of bias against young white men because patriarchy and privilege. But I went through pretty much 5 years of pretty heavy psychedelic healing work to get through my traumas. And my traumas were based on my upbringing. I grew up in a war zone. I was a war refugee, an immigrant. even in my relationships, you know, I had some serious struggles and challenges, and we all do, right? This is not to say, this is not the grievance Olympics. It's not who's had a rougher life. It's right. Just we have, everybody walks a path and we have challenges, and healing from those challenges, I think, is incredibly important to enable to have good, healthy relationships of the kinds that, you know, that we all do. And that is not an opportunity, not, you know, these young men, they don't have the resources and the time and even just the life experience to be like, I need to heal. Right.
Again, or even know that they're hurting and being hurt and being exploited and don't know it.
If you say you're hurt, you're a P-U-S-S-Y, right? Like in their parlance, right? You're weak. You're a loser. They discourage the kind of healing and introspection and self-care that would make them better partners and, quite frankly, get them laid. Because this is like kind of the fundamental challenge that the grievance is that they're not having any sex. That, like, nobody wants to sleep with them. That's their fundamental grievance. That's why they're involuntarily celibate, incel. And just being like a decent human being who respects women, like it's actually, I don't think it's actually that hard. If you're a decent human being, but they don't know how to be a good people. And so this is not a question of like these losers, whatever losers. Donald Trump exists because of them. Like, this is so incredibly political. If we want a progressive America, we need to solve the insult problem, because they are becoming these younger generations. You know, for so long we got spoiled, Mark. Every generation was more liberal than the last. And we just kept thinking, time, you know, it's next generation. And the millennials were such fantastic. The millennials are like the best generation politically. Like, they're the most progressive, the most caring. They're the least susceptible to misinformation and disinformation and AI BS. This new, the Generation Z is alpha, you know, the males, not the females, not the women, but the men are sort of, you know, ground zero for the incel movement. I don't know what this next generation alpha is going to look like. I mean, they're still too young, but I do not have a lot of faith, because they're listening to the same people, right? They're listening to the same Joe Rogans and all these, and Benny Johnson and these Manosphere podcasters. So we need to figure out how to create that new narrative about being a man. And it's not about being the head of the household and in woman stays home and pops out babies. And if you don't have that, somehow society has failed you, and feminism is the reason, and kill liberals and this eliminationist sort of rhetoric. How do we talk to these young men in a way that teaches them that it's that just being a decent human being and listening being there and supportive, that's the answer. But it's not part of the dominant narrative. And again, this is fueling a fascist right wing, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And it is dangerous.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it is very, very dangerous. We've got to find ways to take this much more seriously.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit legally.
So just shared a few things with you folks. And so what I want to do, though, I want to use this as an opportunity to kind of segue into something that Marcos and I have been discussing. The New York Times has a headline this morning regarding the Democratic Party getting too rich to win. And so they have a graphic here. What I'm going to try to do is put it up on screen for those of you watching, and then we'll narrate it as well. But here we have, and Marcos has been talking about this a great deal.
Every week that we've talked, it comes up.
Yeah, we've touched on it. So let me see if I can get this up so people can see this, and hopefully everybody can. So you all watching on social media hopefully can see that. But what we have is we have these demographics going back to 1952. We see the blue arrows representing middle income, lower income, and poor, and the affluent representing the red, and all of the red is voting Republican. This goes back again to 1952, and we'll see how this has changed over the years. Poor and working class Americans have typically voted for Democrats. Here's, I think I got ahead of myself. There we go. I think I can do this better this way. At least I'm trying to. McGovern and Nixon, same thing. Then you had Mondale and Reagan. All of these years, the affluent and higher income are with Republicans. Clinton.
By a lot.
Trump,
By a lot.
Kerry, Bush, Obama, McCain, Obama, Romney. Clinton, 2016. It begins to change, and more of the affluent begin to shift.
This is Hillary.
This is Hillary Clinton in 2016. You all see that. So that is kind of the way this has evolved. And then it continues, Biden, Trump, the affluent is not as big, but it's still more poor in 2020. And then literally in the course of a cycle, mm-hmm. it completely shifts again. That's, Marcos, there has to be more to that. I mean, how in 4 years do you lose a whole demographic? Was Trump that good?
Well, you see, I mean, I read this story, and the story is actually excellent. And it talks about the economic shift where, and it sort of puts the blame on free trade, that once Democrats embrace free trade, that voters, low-income voters started shifting to the right. I don't quite buy that 100% because Republicans are pro free trade, right? So that's not the question. You see two big shifts. You see a big shift with Obama, and, you know, he's black. And then you see another big shift with Hillary Clinton, and she is a woman. And then you see a massive shift with Kamala Harris, and she's a black woman, right? So I don't think you can discount that. But I don't want to blame, it's only racist people, because Latinos and even some black voters shifted towards Trump in 2024. I think a big part of that is that the Democratic Party, by shifting to a party of sort of the coastal elites and big cities, is that we are the richest parts of the country, just inherently. And so we have the privilege to talk about things like the importance of democracy and gay and trans rights and abortion. And then people in poor America, they can't afford anything, right? They're in a place where if the price of groceries rises 5%, they got to take something out of the shopping cart. There's no, Mark, price goes up 5%. I go, ooh, groceries are expensive. And I still buy the same things. I just complain about the prices. There are the people here that have shifted from blue to red in a matter of just a handful of generations are the people that look at prices at the grocery store, and if the price went up, they got to take something out. That means they're taking less food home. And when you're in that position, you don't have the flexibility, you don't have the privilege to think about climate change. What do you care what's going to happen in 50 to 100 years if you can't feed your family? What do you care about things like democracy? Like, give me a dictator if I can feed my family, right? That's literally what you're thinking. And we've seen that. I've seen that in my home country of El Salvador. I will vote for the dictator if he keeps me safe. You don't have time to worry about, maybe you have time to worry a little bit about abortion, but really not even, right? So these are people that they certainly don't care about trans rights or gay rights, right? Because those people, they left already. They're some of the people in those big cities making the big bucks because they're like creative and amazing. So what's left behind is disenchanted, nihilistic. There is a reason there is direct correlation between the number of meth labs in a county and Trump vote. Repeat that. There is direct correlation between meth labs in a county and Trump vote. And it's not because Trump voters are meth heads. I mean, we can laugh and make jokes, but no, that's not the reason. The reason is that because those are areas that are so economically destitute that are most susceptible to drug addiction, drug use. So this is the problem, is that because we are so successful in coastal blue America and in the big cities, that we've become gated communities, and everybody outside of those communities in rural America are sitting there festering with grievances. And the irony, Mark, and I've been writing about this nonstop, and we've talked about it, is that these people voted for Republicans that are still the party of the rich. They don't give a rat's ass about rural America. And what Trump is doing right now, cutting the Department of Education, cutting Medicaid, it is affecting them dramatically, disproportionately is affecting rural America. Because when you talk about fraud, waste, and abuse, and you talk about running government like a business, as a business, you don't maintain inefficient divisions within your company. You cut those companies. There's nothing efficient about rural America. There's nothing efficient about the Postal Service driving hundreds of miles to deliver three pieces of mail, because ain't nobody live out there. There's nothing efficient about rural broadband, about, again, spending billions of dollars to lay fiber optic cables for communities of 1,000 in the middle of nowhere, right? There's nothing efficient about rural healthcare. So hospitals are shutting down, clinics are shutting down, senior centers are shutting down. There's nothing a bit efficient about having a Social Security office out in rural, you know, middle of nowhere to serve up 100 people. Nothing efficient about that. So now those are getting closed down. And so they voted for people who don't care about that. And Mark, you and I and every other liberal listening right now, we didn't care that our money went to pay for rural broadband. We didn't care that it went for agricultural subsidies. We didn't care that it funded hospitals in the middle of nowhere. We didn't care because we were happy, because we thought we're all in this together. We're good liberals. We're one people. We're one America. Everybody rises. And yet they voted for the people that think the exact opposite and are getting screwed as a result. And you know what's the worst part? Is that they're not going to change their vote. They're not, because they don't, there's no media that's messaging them. There's no progressive media hitting those rural regions. So Fox News and AM talk radio is doing. And they're going to keep, as things get worse and worse, you're going to see even more Matthews, more meth labs. And so just going to keep. So the irony is that they're voting for their own demise. And yet when that happens, they double down on the people that are destroying them. I don't know how do you reverse that, but I and this kind of makes me feel like a bad person sometimes, but I've stopped caring. Like, if you're going to vote for the people that are taken away, that are putting tariffs on China in such a way that China stops buying your soybeans or your corn or your sorghum. If you're gonna do that, why should I care?
Yeah. That's a fair point. Let me just share this with you before we do move on. Michael, a colleague, Michael Harriet, another journalist, author of Black AF History, is asking, I was sharing this with him. We were talking about his question is in relation to this New York Times piece. And he has some skepticism, but I don't think it's an irrelevant question. I think your analysis is on point, but he has another kind of angle of this. His question, Marcos, is, are wealthier people becoming Democrats and poorer people becoming Republicans, or are people who are always going to be Democrats becoming wealthier and people who are always going to be Republicans becoming poorer? I think that touches a little bit on what you said, because as the blue counties do better, subsidize the red ones, and to be blue and live in a blue county, you know, like where I grew up in Nashville, you can't live in Nashville now and not be wealthy. Mm. It wasn't like that for me growing up. So wherever blue, wherever there's that subsidy in that liberal blue county that's helping out the red counties, it requires a certain cost of living these days. But don't you think maybe that also kind of plays into this somewhat? And then I might have a solution. But yeah, if you could.
Yeah, and all of this is all of this is related. Education is one of the biggest correlations between voter preference, right? The more educated somebody is, the more democratic they are. There's also direct correlation between education and economic attainment. The more educated you are, the wealthier you likely will be are or will become. So that correlation, and when you talk about the incels, men right now are dramatically being outperformed by women educationally, whether it's degrees, whether it's doctor degrees, lawyers, architects, whatever. Women are becoming disproportionately a larger share of college graduates, advanced degree graduates. And that's having an obvious impact in economic attainment, and that economic attainment has an impact on somebody's ability to attract a suitable mate or even have the proper culture to be able to talk to. I mean, if you're a woman with a PhD, like, you're going to want men that have a certain level of economic and educational attainment just to be able to have a basic conversation.
That's right.
And some people say that's elitism, but no, that's just reality. That's just what education is, right? Like, and so, yeah, absolutely. The more educated somebody becomes, the more likely they are to be liberal. This is why Trump and the Republicans are going after the Department of Education. That's why they're going after universities and colleges, because they know that if they undermine our education system, it helps them politically. So I'm just reading. And by the way, Michael Harriet's one of the smartest people I ever have read. Like, he is freaking incredible. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's when your ideology says going to, all right, here's a perfect example. The guy who shot Charlie Kirk. Do you remember when you're like, he went to college and got radicalized?
Right.
Like, spent one semester and dropped out in a college in Utah, in one of the most red parts of Utah. Like, this is not, he did not go to Harvard, get his PhD, and come out and decide to go murder somebody, right? But that was the rhetoric, is this is what happens when you go to college, you get radicalized. And that is what they're messaging their people. They're basically saying, don't get educated. So yeah, Republicans are going to be less educated and therefore have less economic attainment, which is going to create a cycle of doom, while Democrats are encouraging their children to get educated so they can have better jobs and to move to places that have those economic opportunities, which are blue America and blue cities. So absolutely, this is not a thing with like the one cause and the one solution, right? Like, it's complicated, but economics, education, they're definitely intertwined.
Yeah. So yeah. But I think, so I want to throw this out here too. Ought not a solution be, and this, again, this goes back to us as Democrats and us having backbone and messaging, which we're not good at. Going back to what you and I have also talked about ad nauseum, what LBJ said. I mean, people, at some point, there has to be some aggressive educational campaign that lets those in the red counties, the rural counties, the poor white counties know you are actually being exploited.
Yeah.
You are actually, and it has to be, it has to match, it has to meet what Trump and them are doing. There used to be a saying when Reagan was president, and I'm dating myself. Reagan could pee in your face and tell you it's raining and you'd believe it.
Mm-hmm.
That was very popular cliche. And Trump is basically doing the same thing. Oh, MAGA, MAGA, come on, come on, come on. And to you said that goes back to what we were saying about the incel piece. Women are going to school. And probably when you look at the shift with Hillary and Kamala, where those numbers go up, these educated women in blue areas who are getting degrees and are making a decent living so they can afford to live in the places like Nashville. Mm-hmm. I hate to harp on Nashville, but that's a real thing, y'all. Nashville wasn't, you know, you know, that's these places. Living out in the Bay Area, living in all these places, it costs money. But it goes back to the incel. These women are achieving. They don't want to talk to some dude who's giving the three finger sign and the, you know, Nazi. That's not attractive to a woman.
No.
Period. It just isn't. You know, and there are a lot of things that women are tired of when it comes to men. A lot of stupid things men do, women are over. But that in and of itself, that's DOA, giving that symbol. Like, no woman wants to be...
It's the irony, Mark, is that these incels, because they can't get laid, are being drawn to the likes of Andrew Tate. They're still not getting laid, Mark. It's not like Andrew Tate is giving them a solution that leads to more success in mating rituals. Or they don't have the answers. They just feed the grievance and make them feel even worse about themselves. Because it binds them to them, right? And it means money and political power for the Andrew Tates of the right wing.
Yeah,
that's the irony. They're not trying to help them. That's what infuriates me.
No, it just becomes a mutual admiration society. The name of the Netflix series I was trying to think of, you all, was Adolescence. So if you want to check that out, and it won a lot of Emmys because it tells the story of Andrew Tate and his influence and what happens when it comes to young people being exploited and misled and all of that. But anyway, those are the numbers as you see them, almost a plus 20 Democratic shift for Kamala Harris in the 2024. And it was nothing close to that under Biden. Guess what? We got somebody who's going to pop in since I was mentioning him just at literally the last minute. Joining us for Thursday Coast impromptu is our friend Michael Harriet. We were just reading his question. Marcos, meet Michael. Michael, meet Marco. And Marco's just saying the level of admiration he has for you, Michael Harriet. How are you
doing? Huge fan, Michael. Such a great pleasure meeting you.
Great pleasure meeting you, and thank you.
Yeah, we were just talking about this Michael. And you asked a question, but you may also have an answer. What Marcos now was just saying, we can't discount the fact that in many of the blue counties these days, they're actually subsidizing the red ones. And I think it partially answers your question, because to live in a blue county, you have to be making more money these days. And a lot of these blue counties in these big eastern cities and not so eastern, like my hometown in Nashville, where you got to be rich to live in. I ran into Keith Urban once, and I said, you know, man, I'm from Nashville. And he leaned and whispered to me. He said, Mark, Nashville ain't what it used to be no more. I said, I know. I mean, it's like cost as much to live in Nashville as it does in New York. So I think that answers part of your question. There are those who in these blue spaces that are making more money and actually helping to subsidize. And that's the thing Marcos has been articulating very well lately. Actually helping to subsidize a lot of these red counties, but folks in the red counties don't know it and don't appreciate it.
Right. I think that is part of it. And I think one of the things that, you know, I quibbled with the framing of the article, right, is it that, because they, you know, they framed it as people leaving the Democratic Party or poor whites leaving the Democratic Party. And one of the things I quibble with are they just measuring the demographic shifts or the income shifts of the people who would always vote Democrat versus the people who will always vote Republican, for instance. Like, here's an example, right? So if you have 10 people and 10 people and five of them vote Republican and five of them vote Democrat, and the Democratic people are all poor and the Republican people are all rich, right? But if the Democratic voters get richer and the Republican voters get poor, it's the same people now. You might say, well, the poor people are leaving the Democratic Party and going to the Republican Party. But what you're counting really is just the shift of the people inside the party who were traditionally Democratic voters having higher incomes and the Republicans having lower incomes. Now, here is the important part of that, is because we know that a lot of, especially almost half of the white people who vote Republican are uneducated white voters, right? And in the past, that didn't, when we were manufacturing, those were middle-class people, right? When they could work in factories, they can work union jobs, and they would be middle-class. An uneducated person didn't need a, necessarily need an education to get middle-class. And so those people who were traditionally conservative, right, were middle-class. But now, as we see their income shift downward, while at the same time, Black and brown people are being more educated, having more income because of, you know, our educational attainment, because that we're becoming. And so the all those people are still, you know, the Black and brown people still, for the vast majority of them, vote Democrat, right? But as their income rise, and as that what was the white middle class becomes the white poor class, the poverty class, right? You can frame it as those people, those rich people or wealthy people or middle class people are becoming Democrats, and the Democratic Party is getting only wealthy people. But it's just the people who voted Democrats gaining income, gaining wealth, gaining educational attainment, right? So, and it looks one way.
Yeah, no, we were speaking to some of that, right? Education is a big component, and it correlates very cleanly between vote preference and education level, to the point where when Charlie Kirk was murdered, and the right wing was saying he was radicalized in college, right? Like, the shooter spent one semester in some red town small college, but they are demonizing education in a way that discourages them. And there is correlation again between education attainment and economic attainment as well, right? So right. If you're not going to school, and also I believe I've seen, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm almost sure I've seen data that suggests that liberals are more likely to move around to find a good job, while conservatives are like, oh, I love my small town. I grew up here. I'm not leaving my small town, right? And so if we're the ones that are like, yeah, we're going to go find it, we're going to get educated, we're going to go to the city or the state or the region that has the jobs that will make me wealthier, when everybody else is stuck complaining that their Walmart closed or their farm is going bankrupt because Trump did more tariffs against China or whatever, right? If they're stuck unemployed in their dead-end town in the middle of nowhere, yeah, of course they're going to get left behind. And so there's absolutely a component to that. Where I think there's a little bit more to the story is things like Latinos shifting, dramatically towards Trump in the matter of a cycle. The Latino community did not get any wealthier. There is something to, I'm Salvadoran, Michael. I know firsthand what it's like when people elect and support a dictator in order to feel safe. And Bukele in El Salvador, for all his undemocratic actions, has actually made El Salvador safe, from one of the most dangerous to one of the safest in the hemisphere. People will surrender their civil liberties. They will surrender quite a bit in order for safety. And if you're Latino and you are on economic edge and you are at a point where you can't afford to feed your family, and then Donald Trump comes in and says, I'm going to lower prices on day one, voters aren't sophisticated enough to go like, yeah, how are you going to do that? That's impossible. No way you can. No, they're like, oh, he gets it that I'm struggling in a way that Kamala Harris never said, I'm going to lower prices on day one, right? She had plans and schemes and, you know, but we as Democrats, and this is where Mamdani has been so effective, right? He's just like, I'm going to lower prices. And again, we can all be like, yeah, how are you going to lower prices? Good luck with that. But that speaks to voters in a way that those of us who are more sophisticated political consumers, I think perhaps fail to fully appreciate. Like, people just want to hear, like, I get it. You're in trouble. I get it. And I'm going to try my best.
Yeah.
And we as Democrats aren't very good at that. We hide our benefits in the tax code. Why are we putting a child tax credit in a tax code? Why don't we just mail a check to parents and say, you vote Republican, you're going to lose that check. You want that check, right? Keep going. Like, play politics by giving people a direct connection between their vote and their benefits. And Trump was very good at that, right? He signed his COVID check. Like, everybody's like, oh, that's so unseemly. No, that's good politics. Then Biden comes in and has a Treasury Secretary who nobody knows who it is, signs a check, right? So people think, I got my Trump check. Why didn't Biden send me a check? These are the things where it's Democrats need to be better. But having that conversation on the economic side and tying the politics, we suck at it. They're actually pretty good at it. Trump is very, very good at it. And that is part of the factor. But the education part is what, like, this is all of a piece. Like, you know, this is a complicated picture. And we do need to figure out how to unravel these pieces and better communicate on each one of those elements and start rebuilding that sort of lower class coalition. Because the irony is that Trump is completely effing everybody who voted for him in that lower tax bracket. And ironically, I got a tax cut by Trump. I don't need no tax cut. I was doing just fine before. I know a lot of people that could actually use some help that are suddenly not getting help anymore. That's because they wrote it for the wrong party.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do quibble. I talked about this yesterday, shameless plug on my platform, Contraband Camp, about this narrative of messaging, right? And I think there's a missing piece that we don't talk about, and that what we're calling, like, they're very good at messaging. When we say that, what we're talking about is they're just good at talking to white people. that's who the majority of the Republican Party is. And it's a one note thing that you can speak to, because their fears are not necessarily, we call it economic anxiety or kitchen table issues, but that's everyone's fear, right? What they're speaking to is the white fear part of that. The immigrants are coming to get you. Like, they didn't just say, we're going to make you safer, right? Because I think that message plays well with everyone. They're saying, they frame it as, the immigrants are committing the crime. The black people are committing the crime. And if we attack them, that's how we're going to make you safer. I don't know if there's a corresponding thing on the other side that you can do with that. And I say that because when you have a message that you are relaying to one demographic, right, like white people, right? Because even though there are Hispanics and black people who are Republicans, a small minority of them, what those people inside the Republican Party adopt those values that the white people value. They don't have a disparate number of values that a party speaks to. On the other side, right, when you say we're bad at messaging, if you speak to me, Michael Harriet, a black dude in the rural South, from the rural South, that is a totally different message than you can send to a white liberal in the suburbs of Ohio, right? If you're messaging me, you're going to miss them, right? And if you message them, you're going to miss me. So all of those different disparate messages, the environmentalist message, right, is going to miss some people. The messaging about lower prices is going to miss some people who are high income earners who vote Democrat, right? The message about crime is going to miss some people in the rural South who, like, I live in a town that's 80% black and crime is essentially non-existent, right? Like, you know, you read in the newspaper and they're talking about, you know, Joe didn't get his business license on time. And all of those disparate messages, we frame it, people frame it as, and we accept it without thinking about it, as that they're bad at messaging. And although the Democratic Party does have some faults, I think to accept that framing as messaging and not as a result of this wide, diverse coalition of people who have different concerns, right, is part of why, you know, appealing to Democratic voters is a much more difficult task. And it's not going
big, big 10 problem. Fixed,
right.
It's a big 10 problem. The 10 is right. Big. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not going to be fixed by saying, I can make you safer, or I can lower prices, or I like any of the things, like, you know, I can bring Jesus back into your schools, right? All of those things are going to not just miss some people, they are fundamentally the opposite of what those people were voting for. Here's an example, right? Like one of the things you mentioned was that, you know, the Republican voters and Republican voters care about, I forgot what you said, and I was going to make the point that that's a thing that Democratic voters, we talk about like the Trump checks, that's what you mentioned, right? The right. Trump checks, like that mention of Trump checks and giving out, you know, of just handing people a check and who signs it. Well, the Treasury Secretary is supposed to sign it, right? So that ain't messaging. That is just following the rules, right? The when you talk about it, even handing people a check.
Messaging. It's how people know, oh, this is the guy in charge got me this, as opposed to just generic government bureaucrat.
Right, right. But in a sense, what they, I mean, when you have the Treasury Secretary sign the check, right? That's who's supposed to sign the check,
right? Right.
Like, right. And by following the simple rules and not having that egomaniacal idea of, I'm going to put my big signature on the check, right? I don't know if that's a messaging problem, because if we're looking for that, if we're looking for someone who is going to think of those things, we're going to have to choose somebody like Trump. Right.
Oh, we've had this conversation, Mark.
And just to be clear, Michael, hold that point, Michael, point of information. Biden confined in a very prominent labor leader whom you all know. I'm not going to name him right now. But he said to him after the election, they were on a plane together. He was a guest of his on Air Force One. Biden says to his African-American labor leader, he says, you know, I made a mistake. And he said, what's that? He said, I should have put my name on those checks like Trump did. So, Marco says it's messaging, but it's more so strategy, too. I mean, there's no law saying you can't put whoever's name on a check. I mean, that's right. The bureaucracy normally says the Treasury. But if that's the moment we live in this social media crazy culture, those are the little things we just might have to do.
Right. And I think, I don't know if, here's my point. I don't know if it was a strategy for Trump to put his name on the check, right? Mm-hmm. It was the idea of an egomaniac to put his name on the Trump.
I mean, for sure. Check,
and it worked.
It worked, though. That's
right. It worked, right?
What?
A person who is president would more likely say, hey, let's just get the people their money, and then he hands that off to whoever's getting the people their money, and the people person who's getting their money says, well, the, you know, these checks are supposed to be signed by the president, and there is no Biden to come in and say, let's put my name on it, right? Like, that's something a president wouldn't think of, even though I do agree with you, Marcos, in that, I mean, it kind of takes an egomaniac to think he could be president anyway.
right.
Here's a bigger point, is that when you talk about putting it in the tax code, like, perhaps that is because we know that putting it in the tax code is a better strategy if you actually want to give people savings, right? So are we playing politics, or are we trying to address the problem? And I think sometimes those two things are in conflict, right? Yeah. Sometimes, like, if sending people a check is great politics. It is not as effective as saving money in the tax code, right? And when you think about like the child healthcare credit or the child tax credit, right? You can send like those checks don't match what the child tax credit was, right? So they reduced the child tax credit, right, to give billionaires money, right? But if you send people $1,200 instead of saving them $3,500 at the end of the year or having a little bit withdrawn from their check, that money goes to groceries. And then what they're doing really is lowering prices. You have more money to buy groceries all through the year, right? And so, you're actually be having a more effective policy that is less effective politically. And I think that we have to acknowledge that sometimes those two things conflict with each other, messaging and actual effective governing.
Yeah, so like I could sense your hackles like rising when we talk about messaging, because there's this like perpetual debate in the Democratic Party about how do we message better. And I actually agree with you that that is so much ridiculousness in that whole conversation that I can't even. What I'm talking about is making a connection between government and people's votes and how it matters to them personally. And so in my world, if there's government funding for a bridge, there would be a billboard. You know, those billboards saying your tax dollars at work. It would literally name your local legislators who voted for it. Like, people have to understand that there is that correlation. A lot of benefits are in the tax code, but how do you connect that to your vote? When I do my taxes, I'm pissed. I hate taxes. Like, nobody likes doing their taxes. I'm not thinking, well, if it wasn't for the Democrats, I would have paid an extra $1,200. Because there's nothing in that tax code. And I actually follow this stuff, right? Like, for the regular voter, they're not going to know. They're going to be like, damn, government taking my money again. Like, that's the thinking. So the branding of government itself. So I would, like, Social Security checks, I would have the president sign them. Let people know, oh, this is government. I mean, how else? Remember during the Tea Party years where they had the sign saying, government hands off my Medicare? Like, that's how divorced people are from government, where they don't even know that Medicare. They don't know that the ACA is the Affordable Care Act that was signed by Barack Obama, aka Obamacare. They don't know that. And in fact, in a lot of states like Kentucky, you hide that. It's Kentucky Connect, right? It's not.
Right.
You hide the correlation between the vote and the president that made it happen and the benefits. And I was reading about, where was this article? It was like an AP article, I think. It was a local paper, but it was the News Observer in Raleigh, saying this Western North Carolina county is going to lose all their Affordable Care Act benefits, and because this county is white, it's rural, it's 78% Trump voters, and she's saying this woman whose job is to get people signed up to the ACA expansion was saying that. People be like, oh, great, I can finally have insurance, but this better not be that Obamacare because I don't want none of that, right? She's like, oh, no, it's not Obamacare. Like, yes, it is, right? So right. Maybe it's as simple as having the current president sign those benefits. Because you know what? If people see this check comes from Donald Trump ain't going to want to cut that program, I promise you. He ain't going to want to cut it. He wants people to get checks with their name. It would even keep Republicans protecting these government programs once they passed.
Right.
So that kind of message I'm saying is government matters. These aren't magical benefits that come out of some like the vote makes a difference.
I do agree with that. And I think that is a thing that Democrats have to pay attention to, because it is not just like being an effective governance body is important, but you have to get elected to be an effective governing body, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you get elected, right? No, that's a good point. Gentlemen, in the interest of time, let me just, and you know, I this has been a great discussion and an impromptu one. We were blessed to be joined. I'll just text my man, what you doing? Pop in if you feel like it. I appreciate that.
Oh, awesome.
I, I, No, this is great. And one thing I would share, and I think we all would agree, the Big Ten issue and how Democrats have to address so many constituencies, and it's hard to do that without there being some conflict. But just before you came on, Michael, I was saying to Marcos, though, I think all Democrats can sing from the same sheet of music when it comes to those who are being fooled by Trump and are voting for him, thinking he's going to do something. Farmers are suffering. These tariffs aren't helping people. So I always go back to the LBJ quote. And maybe we need to continue to educate white rural voters, if not white voters in general, including some of those in the Latino electorate, Marcos, who think something's good is going on. Because that's his own thing, that you come here and you're willing to stick your head in the sand as your loved ones are being rounded up by ICE. There's something about assimilation into this American exceptionalism that is harmful. And even for those who are Latino, many of whom are religious and Christian and Catholic, that in of itself is sort of his own contradiction. Well, I got here the best way I could get here. And y'all, you got yours to get. That's why, Michael, I never really liked the lyrics, God bless a child who got his own. Because we're supposed to be about God bless all of us trying to get there. But what was the LBJ quote? If you can convince the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pocket. He'll give him somebody to look down on, and he'll empty his pockets for you. And I think that's a salient quote. And every constituency in the Big Tent, I think, can share that and educate that and message on that. But look, I want to thank Michael. This is your first time. Marcos and I do this every Thursday, so we welcome you to our special segment on Make It Plain Thursday Coast. Folks, go to contrabandcamp.com, subscribe on Substack and online. Michael's doing incredible things. He is an historian as well, with some epic threads on history. And he has, there are folks who have history PhDs who call me and say, man, I didn't even know that. Michael taught me something. I said, yeah, but it shows you, you know, what the real deal is. So we appreciate him doing that. And of course, Marcos, we appreciate you every week joining us so we can have these conversations. But we got to do something, y'all. We can't concede the ground to these folks. It is hurting, and it's even hurting those who he pretends to be helping. And so it's our duty to expose that. So I want to thank you both. Michael, thanks for popping in, man. Okay.
Thanks for inviting me.
And Marcos, good to see you as well. Yeah. That's Thursday Coast for this week, folks. It has been Made Plain.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.